Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankov coming to you live on the Republic Broadcasting Network from San Antonio on this June 28th, Friday at 1 p.m. Central Time, which for those of you listening abroad is 9 p.m. in Moscow and 9:30 p.m. in Tehran. I was on the Islamic Republic of Iran News Network yesterday giving my prognosis for what would happen in this debate. I don't think you have to be a real prophet, do you, to have it figured that what happened last night would happen, only it happened worse for Biden and the Democrats than even they could have imagined, where even The Atlantic is now calling for Biden to step down his performance.
Did you ask the Iranians about their presidential debate? I bet it was a lot more substantive than ours.
It would have had to have been. And in this particular situation on our V Can Talk to roadmap for this show, I have basically indicated that people might do well to watch or to rewatch the Nixon-Kennedy debates. We put all four of those up on the roadmap via YouTube in order that people might understand that there was a time when whatever the deficiencies of our presidential candidates, they gave it a much better effort, of course, than what we saw last night. And it was quite fascinating that it seems to be a consensus that Biden was completely out of his gourd and was frighteningly incompetent, whereas Trump, yes.
Sorry to interrupt. Did Nixon ask Kennedy if he slept with Marilyn Monroe? Did he? Hello? Oh,
yes.
No. Okay. I was asking, did Nixon ask Kennedy if he slept with Marilyn Monroe?
I don't remember seeing that in the debates, no.
Okay, because Biden he accused, not that Marilyn Monroe was a porn star, but he accused Trump of sleeping with a porn star, having sex. He's acting that having sex with a porn star.
Yes, well, we might get into Mr.
I'm sorry to bring down the classiness level of your show. Please continue. I'll contain my.
No worries. In this particular case, I think most people are agreed that what happened last night was a combination of sneering and some prevaricating on Mr. Trump's part, with some entertainment thrown in, of course. And then in Biden's particular situation, even The Atlantic admitted that whatever Trump's deficiencies last night, that everything was all about Biden and about what he showed in terms of mental competency, although The Atlantic didn't exactly use that term as far as what happened last evening. Patrick, I'll be asking you some questions here shortly about this whole issue of this debate in terms of not simply the differences between Trump and Biden as far as policy is concerned, but the many similarities between the two, particularly in foreign policy. The other thing that clearly came out, as I had indicated to the Islamic Republic of Iran network yesterday, is that Trump would basically have about a fourfold strategy. In this particular case, inflation, economy, borders, and crime. Those would be four areas where obviously the Democratic Party and the Democratic Party's candidate would be extremely vulnerable. But even that was less about policy last night than about the competency of the current occupant of the Oval Office. And in this particular case, of course, it is quite obvious that the Democratic Party stands fairly accused of having covered for someone who is a 25th Amendment candidate and doing so in a fashion which put the interest of the country in jeopardy. I think that most people, you don't have to be a partisan Democrat, you don't, or Republican, to acknowledge that this was all about a situation last night where one of the two major party candidates, in this case the incumbent, is simply not mentally fit to run. I happen to think he's not morally fit to run either, but we won't hit him that low today. And when we talk about the effects of his particular policies on the American body politic, it's quite obvious that this country is in serious trouble. And so on Russian social media, I put the Nixon-Kennedy debates up, all four of them, so that people of that generation who are still alive And people now around the world who understand the English language can see that there was a time when the United States fielded legitimate presidential candidates. They might be crooks, they might have moral issues, but they were top flight people in terms of their intellectual abilities and their resumes to be president of the United States. I think we would say that today, both about John Kennedy and Richard Nixon. And in regard to Mr. Nixon, someone sent me a picture the other day. They had attended his presidential library out in Yorba Linda, is it? Yorba Linda, California. Mr. Nixon is buried there, and his headstone simply refers to him as a peacemaker. He would be remembered as a peacemaker. That is a very, very vivid testimony as that headstone reverberates now with the current American situation, where with either one of these guys, we arguably have headed toward World War III. Let me summarize just a couple of things, and we'll bring Patrick into this. RT, Russia Today, U.S. media and experts react to Trump-Biden debate. The question now for RT is, who among serving Democrats would go public and tell the president to drop out of the race, according to one news outlet. Biden's campaign official, who spoke for the record, Seth Schuster, insisted that the president will continue to seek reelection despite his shaky performance during a debate with Donald Trump. In this particular case, what was so humorous about it is that U.S. media outlets trying to defend Biden at all have suggested that his shaky performance was due to a cold, which they claim has been confirmed by a doctor who examined the president ahead of the debate. My remark is this: the U.S. attaché in Kiev was recently found dead this past week. He had high cholesterol, according to the U.S. embassy. Debate moderator's husband is one of CIA agents who lied about Hunter's laptop. Jimmy Dore brings that to us via YouTube. So here you have the 51 deep state operatives who lied to the American public about Hunter Biden's laptop being authentic and about the contents therein being authentic. And in this case, one of the liars involved has a spouse who was the debate moderator last night. Draw your own conclusions. Even she couldn't save Brandon last evening. And now all of these mainstream Democratic magazines and outlets are trying to be as pious as they can about the fact that they have all been knowingly covering up for Biden ever since he became president, and covering up for things that went on before the 2020 elections, including the 51 deep state liars that virtually got Joe Biden over the top in an election he would have otherwise lost. Washington Post reports today, Supreme Court strikes obstruction charge used for hundreds of January 6th rioters. Here's one for you, folks, and we'll get into some of the questions I'm going to ask Patrick in a short time. Trump complains about the Israel lobby losing its influence on Congress. Dave DeCamp posts this for antiwar.com. The roadmap will have a quote from that article. This should disturb anyone who, in fact, believes that Donald Trump is an Israel-first paleo-conservative. I wanted to correct this in terms of Alexander Dugan. I like Alexander Dugan. He makes me look like a mental midget when it comes to Eurasian philosophy. Perhaps when it came to biblical knowledge, I could hold my own with him there. But Alexander Dugan, who I think is a terrific individual and a brilliant thinker, is in fact in error in calling Donald Trump a paleoconservative. I corrected Mr. Dugan on this on the Islamic Republic of Iran news network yesterday, with complete deference to Mr. Dugan on virtually anything. I think he's a great man. He is a particularly pivotal figure in 21st century thinking as we approach potential apocalypse. But Donald Trump is no paleocon, folks. You might have to vote for him, but no paleoconservative supports Israel and Zionism in the way that Mr. Trump does. He is not an America First candidate in the Charles Lindbergh, Pat Buchanan, Robert Taft tradition. And of course, when you look at his first administration, we had John Bolton, Mike Pompeo, Nikki Haley, and team basically running his foreign policy. What does that tell you about what Donald Trump might do where Israel is concerned in a second Trump administration? In this regard, on Israel and Zionism, arguably, This is what I said yesterday to the Islamic Republic of Iran news agency or news network. Trump and Biden pretty much draw even on Israel and Zionism. That may or may not be fair, but I'm going to ask Patrick for his remarks or his thinking on this and a series of other things that I had in my notes from yesterday. Folks, the draft is returning. If you've not seen the National Defense Authorization Act, the latest version of it that passed the House of Representatives, it includes a resumption of the military draft for ages 18 to 26. The Senate Armed Services Committee passed this National Defense Authorization Act 22-2 and sent it to the full floor of the Senate. It includes not only the military draft, it was particularly clear about conscripting women as well as men. There's a lot more in that that we won't be able to cover on this show, but I'm going to try and take that National Defense Authorization Act apart this weekend, look at a lot of its individual components, share some of what I learned with Patrick, and he and I may want to do a future show just on the NDAA alone, as the drums of war continue to beat, both in Palestine as well as in Ukraine, as well as in all of this absolutely cockamamie talk about going to war with China in the next couple of years. So there you have it, folks. It seems to me that on issues of war and peace, the issue of national debt, the issue of New World Order, the issue of Israel and Zionism, that in this regard, there are a lot of disturbing things going on in this country, regardless of who wins this election. I would also say that when you look at this particular circumstance, as well as the silence last night on the whole issue of military conscription, that these guys were also silent, in my view, on several other important topics. Abolishing the Federal Reserve Board, abolishing a direct federal income tax on American citizens, fractional reserve banking. Those are just a few of the things that nobody was talking about last night. And I said to the Islamic Republic of Iran News Network that they wouldn't talk about those issues because that shows the extent to which you have a cabal running this country where these Republican and Democratic candidates are so often two parts of a counterfeit coin. One other thing that will bring Patrick into this, I recommended to Trump a bonus story to use last night. And I know he wasn't listening to me or reading me. I was largely recommending it to myself for this show and for what I would do if I were Trump. U.S. government lobbies to remove trans gender surgery age restrictions. You know who's reporting that? The New York Times. The New York Times. U.S. health authorities pressured the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. It doesn't exactly sound like heavyweight wrestling or boxing affiliations, does it? The World Professional Association for Transgender Health has been pressured by the United States health authorities to remove age restrictions for teenage surgeries from its guidelines published in 2022. The New York Times reported on Tuesday, citing newly unsealed court documents. According to the outlet, the administration of Joe Biden, and specifically the Assistant Secretary of Health, your kosher Admiral Rachel Levine, who is transgender, feared that age limitations could fuel the growing political opposition to the controversial treatments, not to mention Levine himself or herself, not to mention the growing political opposition to Joe Brandon Biden and all that he represents that looks like it's beginning to grow a little bit. I won't read anything else from that article, but if Trump had really been doing his research or if his people had been, that would have been interesting had that been brought into play last night. Reuters is reporting increased spending pushes 2024 U.S. budget deficit estimate to $1.9 trillion. The Biden team, according to Melvin Good of Counterpunch, ignores Israel's history of deceit and deception. I think they know about it and simply don't give a rip, Melvin, but we'll let that title pass. Wikipedia rebuffs Jewish groups' call to override editors' move against the Anti-Defamation League. The Jewish Telegraphic Agency isn't particularly pleased that the charitable foundation that owns Wikipedia said that it respects the decisions of its volunteer editors after receiving a letter from a broad coalition of Jewish groups calling on the foundation to override a move by editors to declare the Anti-Defamation League an untrustworthy source on Israel and Zionism. We have a little bit bigger of an excerpt from that that will appear on your roadmap. Anti-Defamation League faces Wikipedia ban over reliability concerns on Israel and anti-Semitism. That's yet another story from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. Jay Blankford from Counterpunch reminds us of the ADL spying case in 1993. One of the people being spied upon was our old late friend here at the Republic Broadcasting Network, Michael Collins Piper, who wrote what I would argue is the key volume of all ever written in regard to the Kennedy assassination. And in this particular case, that San Francisco case in 1993 is one that we need to review. Recalling that ADL spying case, illegal spying case against American citizens, makes you wonder why the feds are always turning to the ADL for these so-called fusion centers that they use in all of our 50 states to develop profiles on potential domestic terrorists. As I've mentioned many times on this show, in 2008 in the state of Missouri, the FBI and the ADL and Missouri state law enforcement came up with a very interesting profile for the fusion center there in Missouri, the so-called Missouri Information Action Center report. If you're a white male, if you're pro-life, if you're married and heterosexual, if you're a Christian, if you're a homeschooler, if you own any firearms legally, if you would vote, and this was actually in their report, if you're thinking of voting for a presidential candidate like Pat Buchanan, Ron Paul, or Chuck Baldwin of the Constitution Party, you could be a domestic terrorist. This is all being put together, folks, by the people that are arranging to destroy the First and Fourth Amendments of the United States Constitution in this country, among many other things. And these are the people who are trying to defend Israeli genocide in Gaza. Think about that one for a minute. Okay, with that much having gone up on the news board, Patrick, let's come back to you now on this. Trump and Biden on Israel and Zionism. I wrote down an essential equivalency in my handwritten scribbling yesterday before I went on Iranian television. I've already made the point about my correction of a great man, a gentle correction of a great man, Alexander Dugin, in terms of my expertise in American politics and American history. Trump is not a paleoconservative. There isn't a paleoconservative in the world properly understood and defined who would support Israel and Zionism. In this regard, I think you'd agree with that. On Trump and Biden on Israel and Zionism, if you had to take one of the two, let's get your take on this. Is there at least a nuanced difference between the two, or are we stuck on that position with either one of these guys?
So I'm going to differentiate between before the election and after the election.
Okay.
During the election campaign, Trump is being worse than Biden, right? Biden and the Biden team, because, you know, Biden's not really that much in control of things. He's not necessarily a complete non-entity in his administration, but, you know, he's kind of the avatar for the Biden administration. And in order to try to get reelected, they're having to at least make symbolic gestures that they're trying to restrain Israel's genocidal ambitions, whereas Trump's not. I mean, Trump is purposely positioning himself to the pro-genocide side of Biden, which is retarded in terms of seeking votes, but it seems to work in terms of getting $100 million from Miriam Adelson. So there's that.
Yes.
Of course, the thing is, if Biden were to be reelected, the pressure from his young voter base would no longer exist, and they'd just go back to being full Zionist. It would still be Anthony Blinken in charge of the State Department. That'd still be so. Whereas Trump post election may well, I mean, he's a wild card. If he gets this $100 million from Miriam Adelson, what's the pound of flesh she's demanding? And the speculation is it's recognition of an Israeli annexation of the West Bank. Now the thing is, what America thinks of an Israeli annexation of the West Bank, America's not doesn't have the same standing in the world now as it did even say 5 years ago when Trump recognized the Israeli annexation of the Golan. The American standing's gone way down, but Trump could be worse than Biden on the Middle East, or he could betray the Jewish donors on it. You just never know. So that's
yes.
That's my feeling on that.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see, of course. But in this particular case, especially with what is going on in Gaza and the way things are now heating up between Hezbollah and Israel in southern Lebanon and in the northern border of Israel, and the ongoing wild card of Iran as it presently sits back and watches, we obviously are sitting on a powder keg there, even aside from the Russian-Ukrainian war. So in this particular juncture on this issue, perhaps in foreign policy generally, there is not the great gap between these candidates that their partisans insist exists. So we'll watch that one, taking your very, very fine comments in an advisory capacity on this as we determine how good your skills and my skills as prophets are, both in the first Tuesday in November as well as thereafter. Let's take the whole issue of Biden and Trump on the American surveillance state. John Whitehead had a story on this with his very fine website dealing with a lot of legal and constitutional issues. I think John Whitehead has pretty much said that as far as turning back the American surveillance state, it doesn't even make any sense to vote on that basis because we're stuck with that regardless of who wins this election. Given what seems to be in the process of making it through the Senate slowly but surely in terms of this National Defense Authorization Act, would you agree with Whitehead on that, or do you think between Biden and Trump, that when it comes to the American surveillance state, that there would be a nuanced difference between the two, at least, when it comes to issues related to the Fourth Amendment?
I think there could be a difference. With Biden, we know what we're getting. We're getting Merrick Garland. And Merrick Garland is one vicious Jew, and he is out to make sure that we don't have a First Amendment, we don't have a Fourth Amendment, Second Amendment. Merrick Garland is... He needs to make sure that the goyim have no freedom. That's his goal.
Is it fair to say that he's basically a global homo Jew in regard to what he's doing with the Justice Department?
Yeah,
it would seem to be that way in terms of his lack of a border policy.
Yeah. He and of course the border is really more in charge is really more under the authority of Alejandro Mayorkas, who's also a Jew. He's not Spanish. He's a Jew. But yeah, Garland, weaponizing the Justice Department, throwing all the January 6 people in prison, just letting them languish there, going after Trump's associates. He is out to stamp out any kind of freedom. I mean, he is trying to create a Jewish dictatorship in America. So he's the worst. You don't know what you're getting with Trump. And you look at Trump's first attorney general, the what you call the hapless senator from Alabama, Jeff Sessions, probably would have been okay, but he made the mistake of recusing himself from the Russia investigation, which wound up handing half of the Justice Department over to his deputy, Rod Rosenstein, who weaponized it, weaponized the Trump Justice Department against Donald Trump, ironically. But you know, did Bob Barr last until the end, until January 20th? Bob Barr was not a good pick either. In between the two, there was an acting guy named Whitaker who was all right. So you don't know what you're going to get with Trump in terms of who's he going to have for attorney general. We don't know. There are most of the people that Donald Trump will appoint are going to be lousy people. I mean, he's talking about Nikki Haley. But on the other hand, there are a couple of decent people who might get into a Trump administration, one being Colonel Douglas McGregor, another being Tulsi Gabbard. There's a possibility you might get a decent person here and there in a Trump administration.
Yes, I was going to recommend to people that they watch Tulsi Gabbard's speech on the anti-Christian bigotry that characterizes the Biden administration. This was sent to me by a friend who's a medical doctor here in San Antonio. It's quite the presentation, and it just makes one wonder if the Democratic Party had any principle at all and had nominated Tulsi Gabbard to the presidency, the presidential nomination of the Democratic Party when they had the chance, they'd be sitting quite well right now. And however, when you choose mannequins like Joe Biden, who's also a crook, by the way, in my judgment, and he's a moral pervert. He's a cultural Marxist. That's my opinion of him in a nutshell. And then, as Patrick puts it, Chlamydia Harris for a running mate. This is where this is. And of course, Gabbard destroyed Kamala Harris in the first televised debate of these Democratic candidates 4 years ago. And just amazing, the fraud of a major party that based upon Gabbard's early performances in these debates, that she wasn't nominated. We will be back. You are listening to Eddie Arnold on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Why You're a Woman from 1970. Mark Dankoff and Patrick Slattery will return. And we may or may not take calls today. Let me see how much I can get Patrick through here in a reasonable time.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in, and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Health Simple with Kalwara Shilaji, fact bit number 3. Shilaji is the supreme yoga vaha. Within Ayurveda, Shilaji is the singular substance that towers above all other herbs, herbal minerals, and earth-made adaptogens. Yogavaha refers to substances that have the ability to synergistically make better and carry other substances to its prescribed destination. In the case of Shilaji, most any herb, food, or mineral is amplified with ionic potential, superimposing superior efficacy with increased cellular energy and absorption rates. One of the best applications for Shilaji is to add a drop or two into your favorite herbal tincture and foodstuff. Simply put, Shilaji makes other substances more effective.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
Their faces gaunt, their eyes were blurred, and shirts all soaked with sweat. They're riding hard to kids that heard what they ain't caught them yet. Cause they got to ride forever on that range up in the sky, on horses snorting fire, as they ride on, hear their cry.
We are back. You are listening to the Dankoff Report on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here on this Friday, June 28th, we began at 1 p.m. Central Time, which, of course, is 9 p.m. in Moscow, 9:30 p.m. in Tehran. We may pick up a few of those listeners, both from VKontakte as well as the people who saw me on the Islamic Republic of Iran News Network yesterday. Patrick, I think maybe we'll stay the course of the show without taking callers, simply because I want to continue tapping your brilliance on some of this stuff. You're a legitimate political analyst with even a higher degree of education than I have. And I'm really glad you're coming to us today from Charlottesville, Virginia, from that bus stop there as you're wearing a trench coat and sunglasses. But at any rate, can you hear me okay?
Yeah. No, I was at the bus stop in Charlottesville, Virginia, I was actually at that bus stop just around the corner from where James Field had his traffic accident. I was there like a half hour after the accident. I had no idea what happened, but there was this reverend minister in some sort of gay rainbow garb, and he was in freak out mode and telling me to back off.
Yes. For those of you who don't know this or don't remember it, Patrick was an eyewitness to so many of these things that took place in Charlottesville. He was there simply to observe and to watch and to covertly report to those of us interested in an inside source who worked there precisely what he saw going on. I believe that that material is still accessible somewhere on the net in terms of what he saw, and that's well worth your time. To listen to what he had to say, because unlike yours truly, he happened to be there. Patrick, let's return to the border issue for a minute. Let's assume for a moment that Trump is sincere in wanting to complete and finish a wall, that he wants to get the American southern border under complete control. Because in every nation state has to be able to control its own border, right? And unless you're Alexander Mayorkas in the Hebrew Immigration Aid Society, right? You believe that there should be a controlled access border for the vetting of people. Let me ask you this: in terms of the 30 million illegals, give or take, that are known to be in this country already, do you think Trump will attempt to kick them out? Do you think he will be able to kick them out? How will this whole thing be processed, or will that simply go away as an issue after the election, regardless of who's elected? What's your take on this? Let's say Trump is elected. You think he would be able to do something about all these illegals here?
Okay, let's just say that he has more success in the wall than he did in this first term. The first term, he got slats built. Not even a wall, they're slats, which you can get, I guess, some power tools at Home Depot and cut down one of the slats and get yourself through. So it wasn't even that great. But he made, you know, a certain amount of progress. Let's just say he makes more progress, builds a wall. And let's say, okay, he's not deporting 30 million people, but, you know, maybe he'll deport some gang members and whatnot. Maybe let's just say he deports a significant portion of the people who entered the country illegally over the past 4 years. Even if he does that, what he's been saying the past few months about legal immigration, about so-called stapling green cards to the diplomas of anybody who graduates from an American college, including junior college. Okay, so let's just say you've got some exchange student from Africa or wherever who majors. He goes to some third-rate school and majors in gender studies. She's the best and the brightest. She gets her permanent residency. Permanent residency allows her to get everybody from her village over in chain migration. So it really wouldn't matter if he got illegal immigration under control if he's going to expand legal immigration. You know, somebody who comes over on a student visa, the screening process for the student visa has never been considered, this is permanent immigration. The whole idea of the student visa is somebody comes over, studies for a few years, goes back and helps their own country. But now he's saying, oh, no, all student visas are permanent immigration visas. And, of course, every permanent resident is able to sponsor their relatives. Now, if you get a permanent resident from Europe or East Asia, odds are they don't have very many relatives, and odds are they're coming from a country where their relatives are probably perfectly happy and don't want to immigrate here, with the exception maybe of China. But you get people from Africa or India or Central Asia or a lot of other places. Yeah, they have big extended families, and those people for the most part do want to come to the United States, and you're going to Each one of those stapled green cards to a diploma can, within a very short period of time, be 20 or 30 or 40 people within, say, 5 years through chain migration.
Yes, and I was cautioning some people off camera on this issue yesterday. Somebody over there in Tehran wanted to ask me some further questions off the record on this issue of immigration, legal and illegal. And I said, let's just take the so-called illegal for a moment. Ronald, do you remember Ronald Reagan's one-time amnesty for illegals? You remember back in the 1980s, right? Then, of course, in 1992, Patrick J. Buchanan was quite rightly pillorying George Herbert Walker Bush on this question of illegal immigration into the United States, as well as the issue of the exportation of our manufacturing sector of our economy abroad, the whole issue of Zionism in Israel, the whole issue of worthless foreign wars, and so forth and so on. But Buchanan zeroed in on this immigration thing. And at the time, I'll have to go back and check notes from an old Human Events interview with Buchanan when he was running against George Herbert Walker Bush in 1992. But let's say that at the time, I think there were 7 million illegals in the United States. There are now over 30 million. There could be 40 million here. 30 million is the one figure that keeps coming up in various people's estimates. I don't know that anyone knows for sure. But obviously, this has simply mushroomed in terms of American demographics and American governmental taxpayers' money going into this issue, as well as not vetting people coming in and out of here where security issues are concerned. You know, so when Trump starts talking about stamping a green card to the diploma of every foreign person who graduates from an American college, just as one example, one suspects that despite all of this hoopla on border, I go back to a much longer history in the Republican Party on this in regard to illegal immigration, going all the way back to the Ronald Reagan era with his so-called one-time amnesty. And I'm very cynical about the ability of a Trump administration to do anything truly substantive on this issue. And I think that includes how zealous they might be in getting people out of here who absolutely have no business here. And I just hope that Trump would at least zero in on these MS-13 people that are here and these other criminal gangs from South America, that he would hone in on people involved in the drug market, that he would hone in on people who have felonious records and everything ranging from assault and murder to child molestation, that we would at least double and triple the efforts to get those people out of the United States and to keep them out. But again, I'm not sanguine on the prospect. And of course, in this particular case, although after last night, one assumes that Trump would win the election, we should not underestimate the power of the Democratic Party to fix an election, folks, in regard to the deep state support that they got in 2020 for that purpose, hence the 51 deep state liars, correct? The other thing that if Biden is not the Democratic nominee, the question is, will there be another Franklin Delano Roosevelt false flag incident that drags this country into a greater global conflict that somehow would preserve a Democrat in the Oval Office? That's another fear that I have. I simply throw that out in regard to speculation that may or may not come to pass. But it's an idea that has come across not only my mind, but the minds of many, many other people. Let me ask you something, Patrick. This whole issue, then I think we will take a caller. Vinny in Indiana wants to chat with us. I think I'll take that call quickly. You may be the one that fields it, Patrick. We'll see. The National Defense Authorization Act. I don't know if you've had a chance to read the version of this, Patrick, or read part of it that came out of the Senate Armed Services Committee in the Senate. The resumption of a military draft, including women. First of all, do you think that will finally pass the Senate in that form, number one? Number two, is the timing unmistakable here in regard to the Russian-Ukrainian war and to Gaza and to these jingoist movement as it relates to going to war with China? Is the Congress of the United States slipping this one in under radar? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard this about the drafting or having women register for the draft. And is it going to pass? I really don't know what the likelihood of it passing are. But don't these defense authorization bills usually pass without? It seems to me they usually pass. And
yeah, they usually pass without serious dissent, which is why when I saw the military conscription version passed the entire U.S. House of Representatives, I just thought, uh-oh. And then, of course, this thing has now gotten past the Senate Armed Services Committee with even a version that underscores the need to conscript women this time. When this thing, I'm going to have to check my Senate sources online as well as in the ones I know who are up there on the Hill to tell me when this thing's going to be voted on in the Senate, on the floor of the Senate. But I'll tell you, I think it looks bad.
Yeah. And at a time when you got, you know, Ukraine, you have these scenes of Ukrainian military recruiters wrestling with men on the street, trying to drag them into vans. And then other bystanders come and intervene and try to pull the men out of the vans. And with the all of the saber rattling, not just against Russia, but against China with Netanyahu dead set on dragging America into a big Middle Eastern war, especially an attack on Iran. He'll be here. What is it? The 24th or the 26th of July? He's going to be here. We've got a lot of hot stuff going on this summer. I was always saying the debate would be hot. We got the GOP convention, and then you got the Democrat convention, and now you've got this drive among some in the Democratic Party to try to oust Biden. I actually have the feeling that in spite of the media and in spite of like maybe the Democrat establishment wanting to get rid of Biden, it's going to be tough because the Merrick Garlands and the Blinkens and the Yellens and the Alejandro Mayorkas and those are all Jews. Jake Sullivan, who's not a Jew, but these people, their ticket to ride is Biden. And if you get Gavin Newsom, these people are not going to be in the Gavin Newsom administration. And so the people who are in a position who would probably have the best access to Biden are going to want Biden to remain. You could have some sort of fight at the convention. You could possibly have a 25th Amendment type of thing going on, but it's not going to be easy. It's not just going to be a matter of the press turning on Biden and you know, Obama saying, hey, why don't you resign or why don't you call it quits? It's not going to be that easy.
Yes. Yeah. So that's my reading of it as well. So here we are, folks, this debate spectacle that many of you watched last night. We are talking about the imminent return of military conscription, including women, if the Senate Armed Services Committee version of the NDAA gets its way on the floor of the Senate and is resolved in conference with what the House has already produced. We have a $34 trillion national debt with $1 trillion adding every 100 days. I heard nothing last night out of either one of these guys that suggests that there's going to be anything other than unprecedented levels of military spending and surveillance state spending under either a Republican or a Democrat administration. And in regard to this whole issue of global war, it seems to me that Netanyahu is a master of working overtime to drag the United States into his bunk. And that means that the United States would have to go to war in Israel, in Palestine. I have a local source in San Antonio who tells me that he has a very close friend who's in the U.S. Army and is currently serving in some sort of an undercover black operational group in Gaza under IDF command. Think about that one for a minute, folks. I'm sure that didn't come up last night in the debate. And then, of course, when you start talking about people that speak in the most cavalier terms about going to war and involving Hezbollah and Iran, and involving Putin's Russia and involving China, this has moved from the mildly crazy to the completely clinically insane, in my judgment, in regard to what this means for every American. When you start talking about moral collapse, domestic civil war, $34 trillion national debt with a trillion adding every 100 days, and we start talking about a global third world war, start talking about a domestic American police state, you know, this is where we are, folks. And even Reuters is reporting that the U.S. budget deficit estimate now is gone from an estimate in February of $1.5 trillion to $1.9 trillion. We are perilously close to a $2 trillion budget deficit in 2024, folks. Contemplate that on top of everything else that we've been talking about here. Vinny in Indiana. Vinny, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
If you got a question for Patrick, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, there's something I would like you to do, Mark Dankoff, if possible. I sent $100 to John Hostetler's campaign. It was very worthwhile. It'd be wonderful if somebody could interview him, because I think his campaign set a lot of important things in motion. The overreaction of the Jewish lobby to his campaign brought attention not just to him, but also to Thomas Massie, because the United Democracy Project, which is, you know, the campaign arm of AIPAC, and all its, like Ryan Dawson exposed last week in his 2.5-hour thing. They're kind of, this is the heart of the web of the Jewish lobby. And, his political career got wrecked 20 years ago. It exposes somebody you guys mentioned, Marian Agelson. She, in part because of John Hostetler, she set up the Republican Jewish coalition and put Coleman in charge, and they've wrecked the Pat Buchanan paleo conservative wing of the Republican Party. Marian Agelson has stuck her face out there. She's a very crude, crass Israeli. I mean, she was always the power behind Sheldon Adelson. She stuck her face out there. The only way we're going to get back and get people to understand the Jewish lobby is take a page out of Saul Alinsky's book. You have to give it a face. She would be the perfect face. She is, she has to be seen and heard to believe. Just like people didn't believe the Great Replacement until you start playing that meme of Barbara Luna Specter. You know, she's that good. So if you guys could get him and interview him, and maybe Tucker Carlson, he's reaching out to a lot of different types of guests. He just had Steve Saylor on last week, from the UNS Review, Mr. Human Biodiversity, and he was like forbidden, he's always been out there, but Tucker Carlson put him show. Maybe, this is one of the first Republicans to talk about the Israeli lobby. Maybe, if you got a good interview, it goes viral, Tucker Carlson will put him on the show.
I had attempted to contact John a while back. I never heard anything, and I don't know if there's a way of, if there's, if he didn't see the email because of where the email went or what. But if you have a way of contacting him, or at least getting some contact information,
I've only met
him
personally one time at a town hall. But if you know him and get him, he really is somebody who's been attacked, and he has a story to tell.
Yes. Well, I tell you, this also came up with Jamal Bowman's Democrat primary loss in New York, didn't it? In regard to a situation where the IPAC targeted him, the Jewish lobby targeted him, and he ended up losing his primary race to a gentleman whose name I don't remember, George Latimer, I guess this guy's name, who's kind of a, well, he's kind of an establishment Republican, Democratic type, as near as I can tell. But NBC News was reporting not simply that Bowman lost, as an Israeli critic, lost this primary to George Latimer, who I guess is the Westchester County executive up there. But the other thing in New York's 16th congressional district is that it has now set a record in terms of campaign spending in that race. $25 million were spent in this race between Bowman's unsuccessful attempt at reelection and that spent by George Latimer in a winning effort. But the significant thing.
A lot of that was UDP money.
It's $15 million of it, to be sure. In other words, $25 million total. But even NBC News and admits that 15 out of that $25 million came from the United Democracy Project, a super PAC linked to you know who, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. So, folks, there you have it. 84% of the vote in at the time that NBC was running this story. At that juncture, Latimer was leading Bowman by a 58.4% to 41.6% margin. This is the power these folks have, folks. And I think what Vinny is telling us is that we're not simply talking about the Democrat Party here, but this is a situation that took place with John Hostetler up in what I believe was the 8th Congressional District of Indiana in the Republican primary. Hostetler's attempt to return to Congress, that he was absolutely defeated by the Republican Jewish Coalition, which in turn works hand in hand with these same people we're reading about in this Democrat primary in New York, which is the United Democracy Project, which is not simply linked to the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, folks. It is linked to the Republican Jewish Coalition, the RJC. So this, I think, in a nutshell, looking at what happened to Jamal Bowman the other night, and certainly what happened at the other end of the political spectrum to John Hostetler in the 8th Congressional District in Indiana, this is what we're up against, folks. These people buy elections. They own the news media. They're in a position where they have an absolute stranglehold, presently at least, both on Capitol Hill as well as with all of these Zionist neoconservatives in both of the major political parties that have us supporting this criminal Netanyahu, who, as Dr. Slattery was reminding us, is going to make his appearance, folks, before both houses of Congress in a month or so. And to think that this mass murderer would be invited to address both houses of Congress and will receive the platitudes that he undoubtedly will receive from all of these recipients of Israeli money, this is what American quote-unquote democracy has been reduced to. And I think the rest of the world sees this for what it is. And one can argue that the end of any semblance of democracy in this country may have been in Dealey Plaza in Dallas in November of 1963, but not solely so. There are plenty of other developments as well. I'd like to thank Vinny for coming on here as a caller. Certainly, Dr. Patrick Slattery is an analyst today with me on the Dan Koff Report and the Republic Broadcasting Network on this Friday, the 28th of June. And I hope that plenty of people abroad get a chance to listen to this show as a result of my appearance yesterday in the Middle Eastern News Network to talk about this coming Trump-Biden debate. Folks, we could be nearing an absolute global catastrophe. And when we look at our own political system, we have to wonder what kind of answers that system has for any decent person. I'll see you next week. God bless you all.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.